Welcome to episode 23. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. Starting with this week's industrial roundup and with community health, 2017 continues to be the year in which a large number of agreements need replacing for community health, much in the same way that that was the case for health services last year. Members will have received a bulletin from us with regards to the Health and Allied Managers and Administrative Officers Agreement requiring the issuing of the NERRR, which is a requirement to signal the formal commencement of bargaining. That same bulletin also makes reference to a return of an authority to act for other agreements that require replacement this year, including allied health professionals, medical scientists, and dentists. With respect to those agreements, we have had our first meeting with the medical scientists, that is the number four branch, which covers dietitians and psychologists, and we hope to start working with them in terms of setting a timetable very shortly. However, with respect to the allied health professionals, whilst we did provide a schedule of meetings for the next 3 months, the relevant union did not attend the first of those meetings. We'll be following up and rescheduling further meetings for the future. In terms of health services, we're just in the process of finalising a log of claims for biomedical engineers following a meeting on the 15th of June to discuss that log of claims. That log of claims will then be subject to a process for approval by the department, and once that's done, it can be issued. We have had preliminary meetings with Professionals Australia, who have been appointed by the ADA with respect to dentists, and we look forward to setting a schedule of meetings with that group shortly. Otherwise, for the other enterprise agreements with regards to the nurses, health and allied and managers and administrative officers, and also the allied health professionals, dates for the SDP PWG meetings for 2017 have all been agreed, and we will be updating members after each of those meetings as to how they go and the subjects that have been discussed. The medical scientist agreement is still going through the process of being approved by government. Once that occurs, it will then be distributed for ballot. As always, we'll be providing updates of all of our activities as they happen through the VHAA community app. It's also a place where members who have any queries about some of the activities can place their questions and they'll receive an answer. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me for this week's discussion is not Tim Nagel, but Emma Scott, Industrial Relations Consultant. Welcome, Emma.
Thanks, Stuart, for having me again.
Now, you've been here before and you know how it works. We've got this week's subject box here on the table in front of us.
Yes.
Would you be good enough to reveal this week's clue as to the subject for our discussion?
Okay.
So for the benefit of those people who are listening rather than watching this particular discussion, would you describe the object that you see?
It looks like a minion.
And on the basis of that, what would you say this week's subject for discussion is?
I'm not sure.
That is half correct. The minion is a reference to the film Despicable Me, and in particular Despicable Me 2. The person who did the music for that film was Pharrell Williams. Pharrell was once in a band, and the name of that band was?
I'm not completely sure.
NERD, which for present purposes is close enough to NERRR, which is today's subject. So in terms of the NERRR, if you could just remind those people what that stands for.
So the NERRR stands for the Notice of Employee Representational Rights, and it's a notice that is required under the Fair Work Act to be given to eligible employees as soon as practicable, but no later than 14 days after an employer wants to agree to bargain a new enterprise agreement for staff.
So the form of that notice is set under the Fair Work Act regulations?
Correct.
So people don't need to make it up? It's already been written for them.
Yes, correct.
And just to emphasise that the issuing of an NERRR, that is the notice where an employer agrees to bargain, is an absolute requirement. It's not discretionary. It must occur.
Yes, correct. That's correct.
And what's the purpose of the NERRR?
So the purpose of the NERRR is most of all just to let employees know that they have a right to be represented in the bargaining. If someone is a member of the union and the union's entitled to represent their interests, the union is a default for that default bargaining rep for that person.
So the notice goes out and reminds people that they're entitled to be represented.
Correct.
But the way in which the representational rights work under the agreement is that if you're a member of a union that's relevant to where you work,
yep,
then they are the default bargaining representative.
Yes.
What about those people who are either not a member of a union or don't want the union to represent them?
So if they don't want the union to represent them, they either have to revoke their status or they can appoint themselves or another person.
So it's effectively for those people who are members of a union an opt-out provision.
Correct.
Now, obviously, we've been through a process over the last 12 months of renegotiating five major agreements for health services. And just in terms of the frequency with which people opt out?
Not that often. We've had some for the Health and Allied agreement in terms of notifying another representative, which was Hazan. And then we did have someone want to represent themselves, but that only happened for a small period and then they chose to no longer do that.
So people opting out of the representation or the default setting of the representational rights is an exception rather than a rule?
Correct, yes.
And what else does the NERR do?
So it also outlines the proposed coverage of what the enterprise agreement is going to cover, and then it also outlines the basic of what an enterprise agreement is and who they should contact if they would like further information.
And just in terms of, it's worth emphasising the importance of the NERR. I think for all of those people who are involved in bargaining, which will be all of the people who are listening or watching this, sometimes we take the process for granted. But the effect of not issuing an NERR?
It means that you can't get the agreement approved. So if you don't issue it within the 14 days, it doesn't meet the deadline, and therefore you might apply, but it would get rejected by the Commission. And also there's instances where it has been rejected because of the content is different to what is prescribed by the regulations.
So we'll go to content in a moment, but particularly just the issuing of the NERR as prescribed is fundamental if you want to get your agreement approved.
Correct.
You mentioned before the content of the NERR has also been something of an issue. Have there been some decisions of the Fair Work Commission that go to that subject?
Yes. A few years ago, there were a range of different decisions on the Commission saying it is or isn't compliant, depending on what was put in by the employer. And as a result of that, the Fair Work Act was changed and it was enacted in 2013, where it was made clearer that the notice could not be changed other than what is prescribed in the regulations, which is really about there are some things in there that are not relevant when it comes to for health services, AWAs, so they're things that can be deleted, and also putting in the proposed coverage.
So just in terms of that, in a broad sense, there are no variations.
No.
There's no room for freestyling.
Correct.
With regards to the content of the NERR. There are adjustments that are directed effectively
Correct.
By that form to reflect the specific circumstances, such as whether or not there's a replacement for an AWA,
yes.
which is not relevant to,
yes.
to our membership.
Correct.
And so the explanatory memorandum is now clearer in that regard?
Correct. It is. And then so as a result of that, there was a clear decision by a full bench in 2014 where an employer did provide employees with extra notices with the NERR, and that was found to be not compliant because it had additional information with it and it therefore could have been seen as forming a part of the NERR.
So just in terms of that, I think it's worth emphasising the reason for such a strict approach. I mean, what that does is it prevents a circumstance where an employer, for instance, editorialises.
Correct.
And or puts forward a particular view as to who should be the representative.
Correct.
And it ensures that people's rights to select their own bargaining representative and exercise their freedom of association is not interfered with.
Yes, correct.
So given that there is this strict requirement, have there been any further changes to the NERR to make compliance easier?
Yes, so since that 2014 decision, notices were still being issued that were not compliant and had extra information in it. So the Fair Work Commission has altered the Notice of Employee Representational Rights as of the 3rd of April this year.
So that's to make it so that there is less opportunity to make errors and issue a non-compliant NERRR.
Yes, that's correct.
So what is the information that under the new 3rd of April 2017 version of the NERRR that employers need to include?
So you've got the employer name and then the intended coverage, which is the proposed agreement name and what employees are to be covered by it. There are also some options in there that may or may not be applicable to the employer. In the instance of health, for example, there's some sections that talk about AWAs that are not relevant, so those parts get deleted. And for that, we do that process before it gets to members.
So just in terms of for VHAA members, when they receive an NERRR from us, which bits have we already filled in?
We've completed it all apart from the name of the employer.
So the only thing that needs to be inserted by a VHAA member when they receive the NERRR from us is the name of the employer?
Yes, that's correct.
So Emma, if this was an infomercial, this would be the part where we would repeat that message in order to make sure that it was completely understood. That is that when VHAA members receive an NERRR from us, the only part that they need to fill in is the name.
If only you had have told me that earlier, Stuart. I could have come prepared.
Well, by the time this is edited, the screen will be flashing, there'll be noises, there'll be lights. You said before that there was an issue in terms of compliance. So I think it's worthwhile touching on the top five non-compliance issues that come up with regards to NERRRs. So Emma, just in terms of those issues, number five.
Number five, I would say, is putting a date on it.
Putting a date on the notice is an absolute no-no?
Correct.
It must be timeless.
Very much so.
Number four?
Headers and footers of the employer.
Just headers and footers? You're talking about putting it on letterhead?
Correct.
So I guess a lot of members would spend most of their time putting official communications on official letterhead, but again, that's an absolute no-no when it comes to NERRRs.
Correct.
What comes in at number three?
Number three, I would say, is putting it in an email and including it where you have the sign-off of the employee that sent it to eligible staff.
I would go so far as to describe that as a classic trap.
Right.
That is where people take the content and post it into the email. That's a different thing from delivering it as an attachment, but you can't post the content into an email.
Correct.
What comes in at number two?
Another one related to employer details is where it says you can contact the employer. Some people have previously put the details of who they need to contact at the employer.
Oh, okay. And in terms of the number one issue, in terms of NERRR non-compliance?
The number one issue is really attaching other documents to the NERRR.
And what's the reason that that is so problematic?
The reason is that there's a risk that it could be seen that all of those other attachments that you've got with the NERRR are purported to be the actual NERRR notice, which then means that it has got more information than what is prescribed by the regulations.
So the message is the NERRR is sacrosanct and can't be altered other than to insert your name in the spot that's provided.
Correct.
And in terms of the kind of issues that that strict compliance requirement has led to, mm-hmm. what are some of the issues for VHAA members?
So what's happened is we've seen that the Commission is getting a lot more nitpicky with the applications process and looking at the compliance of the notices.
Nitpicky is such an ugly term, particular. Mm. We've become quite particular, I think, with regards to ensuring that the NERRR, how has that manifested itself?
So we've recently had for the Allied Health Professionals and a couple of other enterprise agreements now where the Commission's actually asked us for copies of the NERRs, which is not something that we've previously had on record. It was more just about a date that it had been provided to eligible staff.
And so we've altered our process a little bit just to put in some quality control measures?
Yes, correct. So when we send the template NERRR, one of the processes is that now employers have to, in addition to providing us with the date of when it was issued, provide us with a copy of the notice. And then also what we've got to do is for current bargaining where it hasn't finished, compile the notices that have been provided.
So that would do two things. It would First of all, enable us to be able to respond to those requests from the Commission in good time in the event that we do get that request, because there have been instances where we've had to chase people up and that's been very time consuming.
Yes.
But it also gives us an opportunity to do the quality assurance and make sure that the notices that have been issued have been compliant.
Yes, and that's we'd obviously prefer that to happen before the voting stage, because after the voting stage, when the employer and the employee have gone through that process of voting, it just becomes a lot more complex, because if it's not compliant, you would have to redo sending the notice and then again having staff vote.
But just that issue, if a notice, if it gets to the Commission mm-hmm. and the notice is deemed to be not compliant mm-hmm. or not issued within the 14 days, what are the potential consequences?
That you can't proceed with the approval of the agreement.
So this is an absolute must-do. It's essential that members get it right.
Correct.
Just in terms of the NERR, I guess we've focused a lot on that because it is something that makes or breaks the approval of an agreement. But mm-hmm. what are some of the other requirements for the approval of an agreement?
So the first requirement overarching is that you can't ask employees to vote within 21 days after the NERR has been given.
So just on that, it's probably safe to say that the likelihood of concluding a negotiation within 21 days is quite slim.
Yes.
Certainly that's been our experience.
Yes.
But where it can come up as an issue is where somebody has had a non-compliant NERR
mm-hmm.
And have had to restart that process, an issue that can then cause delay.
Yes.
What are the other requirements?
Another requirement is that the agreement and any incorporated material has to be provided to staff for a period of 7 days, and that has to be a clear period of 7 full days.
So just in terms of 7 clear days and access by staff,
mm-hmm.
I think it's always worth emphasising just that members consider who the staff are.
Yes.
That is, it's not necessarily just those people who are present in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to include people who are away on parental leave or annual leave or mm-hmm. long-term sick leave or work cover or for any other reason. It's essential that those people be included in the process.
Yes, an employer has to take all reasonable steps to notify all eligible employees. So that might be sending it to their personal email address or sending a letter out and letting them know that that information is available.
It's an interesting thing for us as we continue to progress the process for enterprise agreements and think about how technology might be useful.
Mm-hmm.
It might be useful at some point that there is a planning process where people who are going to be on leave during when we know are going to be crucial periods during an EBA process,
mm-hmm.
That the methods for communication and notification are well established, whether
mm-hmm.
it's through messages and a login to a particular website.
Yes.
But I think you can see sort of the potential for that process to be strengthened and improved.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the other issues that must be resolved?
Another one is that you have to provide, at the start of the 7-day access period, information about the time and place and voting method.
The voting method. I think that's something worth emphasising, because the Act, whilst it requires a valid majority of people who cast a vote, a valid
mm-hmm.
vote, to be in favour of an agreement, it doesn't specify how that vote should be conducted.
No, it has examples of how it could be conducted, like a ballot, but it doesn't actually limit the ability of how you are to do your voting.
So we've done it several different ways over the years. We've mm-hmm. done it most recently, there's been a drift towards electronic voting.
Yes.
We've previously done it paper ballot. I think I can recall tribal council being one of the methods. We've done it a range of different ways over a period of time. In terms of other requirements of the Act that need to be met.
So an employer must also take the reasonable steps to provide information to the employees about the content of the enterprise agreement, which also includes if there are certain circumstances that might be specialised for employees. So, for example, where there's a cultural diversity, it might be that an employer may have to take extra steps to have a meeting and explain the terms of the agreement rather than just provide them with a summary of changes.
So we've had enterprise bargaining for 20 years or so. You know, and
yes.
I can recall a time when the emphasis on explaining seemed to be greater.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of those items that we need not to take for granted and ensure that people do consider how they can explain. So we provide materials?
Yes, we do. So what we do is provide a template letter that has the relevant dates that are required and the information such as the copy of the agreement, the national employment standards, and also what the voting method would be.
But members should consider what appropriate steps are to ensure that they do adequately explain the content of the agreement.
Correct.
And when can an employer then lodge an agreement for approval?
So it can lodge the agreement for approval once a majority of those that cast a valid vote have voted in approval of the agreement, and that the lodgement of it has to happen within 14 days of that vote being finalised.
So the vote is finalised, the clock is then running.
Correct.
But there are some steps that need to be undertaken. But before we get to that, just so that the type of agreement may also have a bearing on what happens. So what happens if there's a multi-employer agreement and the vote is successful at some sites and not others?
So for a multi-employer agreement, if it's not successful at some sites, the employer has to apply to take their name off the multi-employer agreement, so they cannot be a part of it.
So leaving those people to one side, we've got 14 days in order to get the agreement lodged. What needs to happen in terms of, at our end, in terms of getting that agreement in?
So there's a lot of extra paperwork that we need to do. One is getting the agreement signed. So a signed copy of the agreement has to be lodged with the Commission. And then there's a form called an F16, which is the application for approval, which has really just got some details about the applicant and also details of the union or any other bargaining representative that was appointed.
There's another form as well which goes into a lot more detail.
Yes.
For the purposes of assessing the agreement for the better off overall test.
Yes, correct. So that's the F17, which is a statutory declaration that accompanies the F16. And that has a number of questions related to, I guess, the approval steps that we outlined earlier, so specifying when the vote occurred and the details of how it was explained to staff, but also the most important thing is the details about the better off overall test, which is where we do a comparison of the wages and terms and conditions of the proposed enterprise agreement against the relevant modern award.
And that's something that's also become a lot more detailed over the time that agreements have been made that I would observe.
Yes.
Just in terms of that F17, do we consult with regards to the content of that document?
Yes, we do with the union.
And for their part, those unions that are bargaining representatives, do they need to submit a form also?
So it's not compulsory, but they can choose to put in an F18, which has some information about if they want to agree or disagree with any of the statements that are made on the employer's F17. And then they can also put a support in for the approval of the agreement or the opposite, and then also make an application to be covered by the enterprise agreement.
So just in terms of getting an agreement through as a general rule, particularly after we've consulted with the union with regards to the content of the F17, mm-hmm. I think it's worth emphasising that ideally the content of the union's form should be supportive and perhaps not contradict the content of the employer's form.
Yes.
We did have one experience in this round where a particular union decided to contradict the material they'd be consulted on.
Yes.
And that did have an effect of slowing things down somewhat.
Correct. We had to put further submissions in regards to putting commentary against their commentary.
And in terms of the time frame, once it's lodged within that 14-day period, how long does it take for approval?
Well, it really depends on the matter, but the Commission has a benchmark of 12 weeks.
12 weeks. And in terms of have there been any circumstances where one of the agreements that we've proposed hasn't been approved?
Earlier on we've had some issues with the NERRR, like a lot of employers have, but not ones where it's gone to the Commission and been put in and been not approved. No, but we've had to do some undertakings where the Commission may have thought that they were necessary to ensure that the agreement passes the better off overall test.
It's the better off overall test, and there's also that issue of ensuring that the wage rates are always above those prescribed by the modern award.
Yes, correct.
I think what I've noticed is that the responses back from the agreement team at the Fair Work Commission, there's a lot of scrutiny being applied to agreements. And I think it's worth just reminding people that this is very much in the context of that Coles decision.
Yes.
Which I think is subject to it for a full bench hearing in October. Mm. And that is a claim by an employee that not all the employees were better off overall, mm-hmm. and therefore that the agreement wasn't validly approved, mm-hmm. Which means I think for current agreements that they're being subject to a lot more scrutiny.
Yes, that's correct. We've seen a lot more information or questions come back from the Commission when we've been lodging the most recent agreements.
So this year, in terms of bargaining, this is really a big bargaining year for community health.
Yes.
With a lot of agreements that need to be replaced. And whilst last year was a really big year for health services where some very large agreements expired, they also have a number of agreements including doctors and specialists and dentists and biomedical engineers to replace as well. So this that overview is something that might be useful to people who do get involved in bargaining and are responsible for parts of the process to ensure that that their part in the process supports compliance.
Yes, correct, because it's very important.
Well, thank you very much, Emma, for taking me through that.
Thanks.
And thanks for...